bathroom space. We need more, I mean, we could make it work.
We need to move.
All right.
So we need that picture for a little bit.
So we're going to have to, so we'll have to love them. We'll have the little towel, and then we're going to have to do Amanda's, to put the updated district project like first. Model project second, discussion with the commissions. I think the fourth is this is the drag race, and then hopefully we'll get back to the agenda item, so the second can be here to approve it. Is that all right?
Okay.
So you want to report to our, this will be the history.
Is the Amanda, do you want to see that before the welcome?
No.
Okay, no, but I just said that's what we have, we have this. Okay, so roll to, so this is actually the update as to number six.
Number six of the.
Was it true?
Yeah.
How do you do welcome? Roll call. And that's approved, the agenda, that was the chance to solve.
That you can't do it without your form. That agenda has to have a form to approve.
Well, does Lindsay have it?
Yeah, that's why we're talking to each other, so you have a form.
Okay, so, well, so you want to start before they get here?
We don't know, Sam's going to do that.
On injustice. Oh, well, we better let them do their thing, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to start, let the presentation.
So we want to talk about amending the three vote.
So let.
So we're going to have Amanda.
Yeah, so we only want to do most of the work.
Right, we'll just move up the presentation.
So we're going to amend the agenda, just so you got heads up.
You make the motion to amend it then?
Yeah, but we won't do that till after, because we can't do it, because we don't have.
Without a form.
Okay.
So we'll have to amend it after.
So if they get here, we won't have to amend it though.
Yeah.
A little bit.
We're still moving some things.
We're still moving things around, so we'll still have to amend it.
We'll just see where we end.
Well, we'd like to welcome everyone out today. Sorry for a little delay, we've got City Councilman two that's asked to be excused. Justin and Rondi due to work issues. Sam is on his way back from Manti on a family issue. So basically we're going to rearrange the agenda just a little bit, if we can say it that way, just to give them time back because we don't have a forum to vote on anything. So what we'd like to do today is to start actually with an update on the historical project lighting. Shane.
Yeah, I guess this has been, I just found out today that this has been 2 years in the work trying to put this project together. And I don't know if you guys remember ways back when we did the presentation on the LED lights and stuff like that, that this is part of that deal. So I have Carson here with SCO, their lighting company that they work hand in hand with Annixter, Ryan down there on the end. And so I know you guys heard a lot about Annixter. We do a lot of business with them in the power production side. So I'll turn the time over to Carson.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Carson Fillon. I'm with Stevens Sales Company. We're just local in Salt Lake. I live here as well. Our company's been around since 1914 doing lighting. So we've been around for a long time. I personally have been doing lighting for coming up on 8 years. I've been doing roadway lighting for about 4 or 5 years of that. And that's all I do is specific on roadway lighting. That's all I specialize in, so I can make sure I can work with the cities, guys like Shane, making sure you guys get the right product for what your guys' city needs, what you guys are needing for your residents, your roadways, budgets, things like that. So as Shane mentioned, we've been working on it for 2 years. Different things, LED's been having a lot of generation updates, so we're going from a lot of different styles and really dialing it in to make sure that we're getting the right thing and not diving in too early as well, because if things were right, you know, about to come out, it would be a lot better. So Shane's done a really good job of doing his research of, you know, doing the budgets, but also not jumping the gun to get it done. Wanted to make sure, hey, you got it done right, and it was going to be around for a long time. and not have to be redone. So what we did is, after the first round, what's kind of been happening the last couple of years is, I don't know, are you guys familiar with the Dark Sky Association that's been kind of going around to a lot of areas like this? I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're an association that is trying to get rid of light pollution. And it's a really good thing once you kind of dig into it. And really what it is with your lighting, like your traditional lights you have out there that have the globe, those are producing a lot of energy loss up in the sky, and it's causing a lot of light pollution. Well, when you go to LEDs, you can start to direct that light a lot more. And for the last 10 years, as LEDs have been coming out, we've still been putting them in that same globe style. We've made things a little bit better with some aluminum tops on this, on there, and having the light downward. But what you find with that is when the light hits that refractor, it'll come back up. So even though the light itself is horizontal and pointing downwards, a lot of that light's still getting lost upwards. So we have to find a light that we don't have to deal with globes, but at the same time isn't hard on your eyes. We all know LEDs sometimes can be really bright. Well, the nice thing about Philips is who I represent. They came out with something called Comfort Optics. So it allows us to have no globes, so you're dark sky compliant, get all the light on the ground, but you're not going to have any glare. And I'll kind of do a demonstration of that here in just a minute. But that's kind of what we're talking about with that. But we also had some complications we had to go across with your pole structures, because we've got nice flower pots and double banners and things like that. And if you go take a look at some of those old composite poles, that's what's up right now, or composite, some of them are starting to deteriorate at the bottom because they're not structurally sound and able to handle the weight that goes on to those with flower pots. I mean, flower pots are, you don't really think about it that much, but once you get the soil in there, flowers, you water them, it ends up being a lot of weight. And especially when you have banner arms, you got to think, you know, when you're holding a kite or anything, cardboard box, and it gets windy, you can, all that force that's coming, well, I mean, when you have a 2x4 banner or whatever you have on there, especially on two sides, that's a lot of weight that's pushing against those poles. And over the time, if you go look at those, they've really taken a toll on them. That can be kind of a hazard. So we looked at that. We did a lot of the structural loads, did all the engineering to make sure that it can handle two flower pots on both sides and your banners, so that you won't have to worry about that issue. And we're using tapered steel on it too, so you're going to have a really good, durable light pole out there. And with that too, for your decorative bases, what Shane was wanting to look at was to kind of just make it nice, make everybody know kind of where they're at with things. So on your drawings that I handed out, you can see we're going to put Mount Pleasant on the top of there. But this is an the same base that we're proposing to use. You can see there's several different things on there just because I have a lot of different cities that like doing different things. But this would be the representation of the exact base that we've kind of come up with. And then right here we'll have Mount Pleasant on there. But the way that we prefer to do the logos is, you see this one's in gold, this one's painted, but if you look at these are in a brushed aluminum finish. And the reason we like that is other areas that do their painted finish, over time paint fades. I mean, the sun is really hard on things. So the way we prefer to do them is to actually put your logo on here, or your lettering, however you want it. And this is a cast aluminum base. So we'll build it all, powder coat the whole thing, and then we take a sander and sand down the lettering, and then we put a clear coat finish over it. That way you get a nice, bright, sanded aluminum, natural aluminum finish that stands out and doesn't fade over time. It really stands out and pops and stays. So that's kind of the breakdown of what you're thinking of doing. Now I'd like to just kind of talk about the actual light fixture, because the poles and bases are important with your assembly that we're looking at, making sure that they're going to last, handle the loads, but the lighting is really what we're talking about. So this fixture is the one that Shane...
If you want to sit it there, you can on the end of the...
I'm all right.
Okay.
I'll hold it. Thank you, though. So, all right. I'm good. This isn't my first rodeo. Yeah, just a minute, actually. Yeah, well, yeah, if you want to just plug it in now, that'd be good. Thanks. So this is the light chain was, we're kind of telling them.
On the wall chain.
Yeah, there's one. He just likes to, you know, make it harder on himself.
Yeah, I'm used to those.
So this is the light chain's been kind of waiting for. He was wanting to make sure that he did this right and did it one time. It was going to be kind of more or less future-proof for the city. So we've been delaying the project, waiting for this valve to come out. So what you see, and actually, I'm going to actually turn this off again because I got to show you something without light. With standard light fixtures, your globe would be here, right? So you don't have your globe, which is nice. You're not going to have kids shooting wrist rocket marbles, breaking the globes, which we talked to
Ephraim
today. They took down a light and they had two marbles in their light. So you're not going to have those issues, rocks, broken globes. So it's less maintenance as far as that goes. But what I was talking about with your comfort optics, if you look at most LED fixtures are out there, you'll notice they're on LED boards, right? That are right here. And you don't see that with this. So what they engineered around is evenly spacing all the diodes around the perimeter of this ring. And it shoots it here in the middle. And this looks like it's just a diffuser lens, but there's actual little micro prisms in there, because with lighting, you need to put the light where you want it, not just everywhere. So we have optics in there. So like when we're putting them right here, we want to use a type 3 optic where it throws it to the center of the road, down the road right and left, and a little bit back so you get your sidewalks lit up, but not coming into the windows of houses or buildings or things like that. So there's little micro prisms in there that still give you your optical distribution. So that's how we're able to get rid of the glare, not have any issues with drivers or pedestrians, but still achieve dark sky. It's been a really good thing. We've had about 15 to 20 cities that have switched since last January to using this style because it's been so welcomed with the residents. I know a lot of places, like I like to pick on Hurricane a little bit, they were having residents go and pull fuses out of the poles because the light was going in their windows. Now when they switch to these, they haven't had any issues. Residents have been coming and complimenting them and thanking them and trying to get them to continue with that because they've really enjoyed it. So what you'll see with this, I normally would not do this to people, but you can see, you can't really see where that light's coming from, right? And even if I have a dimmer switch that's built in as well, that I can turn the light up and down, and we'll talk about that. So even when I turn it up, if we were to turn the lights off, it's getting a lot of light on the ground. But your eyes don't perceive it that way because you can actually look at the light. But if you actually look at the ground once it's up there, you have just as much light, if not more, than your traditional lights. So it's nice. You can use a lot of more energy efficient, so you're using less energy, but you're getting more light on the ground for safety for drivers and pedestrians. So it's pretty nice as far as that goes. Maintenance is really good. 10-year warranties on these as well. I went to bat for Shane to make sure it got the best warranty he possibly could, because he's, again, trying to make sure he's taking care of his system. So that's the kind of overview of that. Like I was saying, the nice thing about it is it's future-proof as far as dark sky compliant, as far as color temperature, getting good light on the ground, warranties, and then also something that's coming out with lighting that we haven't really discussed for this project a whole lot is something we kind of like to just bring to the attention. So there's something else we kind of like to do on these is these are smart controls. So cities are starting to build smart meters and sensors and everything like that. And what we can do with these, rather than having a little photo cell in there that reads the light, turns the light on and off, these will do that. But the nice thing about these is these give a good outage management system. So rather than having lights burning all day long or not working at night, waiting for people to call them in, having somebody drive around, spending time figuring out what ones are on, what ones are off, when you plug this in, this actually works off of the LTE system, your cell towers. And when you plug this in, it automatically GPS is on a map on just a web-based browser, and you can see if the light is on or if it's off, what power it's consuming, if there's any issues with it. When a car knocks it over, it will notify you, let you know that it tilted too far, so you can know about that. Like I said, it meters everything, so you can pull power reports, light and state reports. If there's accidents, you need to make sure that there was light there. You can pull that report as well for the police so that they know that light was properly functioning, light didn't have anything to do with this, that type of a thing. But this is something that cities are starting to look at. And the nice thing about going with the direction that Shane's kind of gone is this is future proof of if and when you guys decided to go with something, this can just be put in as an add-on later. It's not something you have to change out with, where with a lot of other lights and whatnot, you'd have to change different parts. So this just gets you ready for the future, because it's something that, like I said, not everybody's doing it right now, but at some point, it's going to be something that everybody kind of moves to, because it saves a lot of man hours and wasted energy. You can also do groups. You can dim the lights up and down. You can set them in groups so that you can take care of it. If there's an issue in a certain subdivision, the police need access of raising light levels or lowering them for anything, you can do that as well. So that's kind of what we're thinking as far as future with that. That's kind of most of the rundown. Do any of you guys have any questions as far as anything?
How far does that set off the light?
14 feet. So if you look at your drawing, and there's something else too with the budgets. The way Shane was able to go about this, getting state funding to help fund the project, they require breakaway anchor bolts on there as well. So if you look at the second page, if you just kind of flip it over, in the top right corner, you can see there's what we call breakaway couplings. So we'll have a bottom section that goes into the ground 4 feet that's covered in tar and protective against corrosion and whatnot. And then from there, there's breakaway couplings that go on that. And then your pole mounts to that. So what happens is when a car hits that pole, rather than them hitting the pole and it stopping and causing a lot of damage, it'll actually take that and break away at the anchor bolts. And the pole will go pretty much over the car wherever and allow that car to kind of come through and causing a lot less damage to the person whoever's driving the car. You'll have those that'll go 8 inches and then your pole is 14 feet. So the fixture will sit about 14 feet, 8 inches in above the ground, which is pretty optimal. When I ran the calculations and everything, that's kind of the sweet spot to get a good distribution across the roads, get it where you need to, and not have it be too high or too low. So that 14, 15 feet is kind of the sweet spot to take care of that.
The way it is now, their elbows pull the direct buried. And so
you hit one,
it snaps right off the ground level, and you never know what's going to happen. And so the state said they have to be right away.
Yep. Which is nice. When they break away, usually you can reutilize the base, you can reutilize the pole. Not always, but usually there's less parts, which makes it a little bit easier on insurance and whoever hit the car. It's never a fun thing. You got an accident, plus you got to buy a light pole. That's not good.
Easier on us.
Easier on them.
Trying to drag a very broken pole out of the ground.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we've gone with this. There's also GFCIs in there as well in the pole. So if you guys want to do Christmas decorations or anything like that, you guys can plug them in and have whatever you want on that as well.
Cost wise,
that's a different story. We're looking just in the fixtures. The fixtures, the poles, and all that. And I think with the flat arms, there's going to be spring loaded. Is that correct?
We can do it a lot of different ways. So you tell me how you want.
I think we're talking to Ryan, we should do the spring loaded flat arms so when the wind blows, they kind of just give.
Move a little bit?
Yeah, instead of being stationary. So with everything all together, so that's just including Main Street and then out behind the stores. Just all those green poles. And I think the Main Street project was done in 19, 93 back then.
Does that sound about right? So those poles have served quite a while. I mean, as he said, they're becoming a hazard with because there's one up by a pharmacy where we just had to kind of put back together the fiberglass, and it's starting to fall apart again now. And so it's due, but with everything, it was around $141 and $141,000. So that's with all the poles, everything. Yeah. And I don't know if we could do the labor, so I had that quoted too by a company that Annexer kind of suggested. And if they were to do it with the labor and everything, that's $147,000.
So that's materials and labor? Or is that just small?
That's just labor. Okay. That's just labor.
That's to take down everything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in on this, they would also do the benches.
That's actually a refurbishment of your benches, your trash cans that you have out there that are the steel trash cans that are green, and your mm-hmm. benches that are green. Actually refurbishing them and sandblasting and powder coating them black to match the black poles that you'll have. The new poles that will be up in these fixtures will be black. And taking down the banner arms and the decorative holders for the plants. You have two of those on not every pole, but on a certain amount of poles. And it's blasting and powder coating those also black to match the poles. So it's a refurbishment project of all that included in the labor of the installation.
Mm-hmm. How many poles we talking, Shane?
There's 50 of them.
50?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that seems
that's eight and main.
No, not well on Main. They're just on State Street. There's only a few, but yeah, that's on each block. Yeah, but yeah, that's including every green pole here. So
State doesn't have that many.
No.
State's only got a few.
No, and the road department, the state road, the UDOT would only pay for the ones here along the highway. We have to cover the ones out behind back in the parking lots. So
for another $6,000, you're going to do all that labor on 50 poles?
No.
Total separate. Another $140,000.
Another $140,000.
Yes.
That's labor on top.
Yes, that's labor on top of that. Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal.
yeah.
If you want to see some of these that are done, we did Provo Center Street and Provo University Avenue, same exact fixtures. And refurbished, done the same thing for some of their trash cans, benches, and pedestrian poles.
And the nice thing about doing steel poles too, like these composites, we can't really refurbish, but these steel poles save 20 years if they need to be repainted. They can easily be taken down, sandblasted, and repainted and stuff like that too. So these are a good long-term investment as far as that, rather than composites.
And that's what we actually did on Provo University and Center Street. Is those were aluminum poles to begin with that had just been up for 20 years, so we were able to take those down, have this company that we work with take them down and refurbish those. Didn't have to buy new, save them, save Provo. Between those two projects, I think it was around $200,000 just between the two projects. And so you'll have that for the future. You won't have to replace the entire pole.
I'm surprised these have lasted as long as they have.
For a composite, if they have last long, you've got to use that as well.
Yeah.
Do you know how many behind over there? How many roughly poles? That
I think there's, what was there, in the back there behind Casey's?
Yeah.
I think there's 15, wasn't it?
15 or 17 comes to mind, yeah, back there behind.
So. But yeah, that's a.
So when you install them, you adjust the light output as you do that, or you pretty well set them all on high?
We'll set them all kind of how we want it to. So that FOS switch that's in there, it's got 10 settings. So we typically give you the highest output there is, because I don't want to get you out of light for some reason. You want more. know, so we'll give you the highest one. Most people have been putting them on like a 6 or 7, something like that. But it's something that we'll probably, I'd say, hook one or two up, check to see what we like, what we don't like, and then when we put the rest of them up, just set them all on that and go. However, if you did with those smart controls, because these, yeah, it's nice, you can go in there, but every time you gotta get in a bucket truck and change it, or with those smart controls, you can literally pull this up from a computer if you're in Florida, change in Florida on vacation or wherever, and change those light levels. So he can set them all right where he wants them from the computer rather than going out and individually doing things. And say, you know, at between 1 and 4 a.m., if you want them to come down a little bit, you can bring them down and save some energy levels as well. And you can set that as a schedule of automatically bring them down, automatically bring them up. And if you're running into an issue at 3 o'clock in the morning, say, yeah, we need the light, you know, back up to 100%, click of a button, back up to 100%. Wherewith this, you'd have to individually go in and adjust. So we could do it both ways.
So, and I think these new ones are 75 watt.
Yeah, so the maximum output is 75 watt on this, but you'll probably more or less have them set on like, I don't know, 60, 65.
And the ones we have, the bulbs we have out there now are 100s and 240s. So it's quite a bit substantial amount of savings when you add all that up every night that they're on. So.
But this quote isn't the smart lights.
No, it doesn't have smart lights. No. All that has the dimmer switch and everything like that.
Yeah, it's ready. It's ready for the smart control, but.
What is that smart control?
You're looking at about maybe a $200 adder per light is all. And that includes 10-year warranty and 10 years worth of services. You don't have monthly fees or annual fees or anything like that. It's all included.
So you'd be looking at adding about $10,000 to that project to get the smart controls in there.
Yep.
But the fixtures, the good thing is about the fixtures are, that can be done in time.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same with the lights that we've been replacing state. With the RX lights and the ones around town, the road focus ones, we've turned them up and down for people because sometimes they've been too light, too bright, so we had to go turn the fog switch down. But it still lights up the roadway a heck of a lot better than those old caretakers did.
So to think he's already been having to go in his bucket truck and deploy and turn them up and down. So you think about the time that they spend to go do that. Yeah, it's nice, but over time that adds up with the labor. To pay for those notes pretty easily for themselves.
Shane, are you using the same conductor, same wire?
Yeah, everything's going to, we're going to keep everything the same, just replacing the poles.
Poles and fixtures pull a lot less energy, a lot less energy consumption.
And like I said, we've been talking about this for 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
Trying to get it.
If you go down to southern Utah where it's warm, St. George got a lot of them up down there. Throughout the whole state, there's a lot of that same fixture up. In the last couple of years throughout the entire state. Mm-hmm. So we've time tested good history on.
Yeah.
So when you turn those lights down, would there be enough energy savings to justify this smart?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're already getting a huge savings from that, but I mean, if you think about how many lights do you have on your system, do you think, roughly? I mean,
well, there'd be, I'm just talking these 50 poles that would do.
Yeah, these 50 poles. I mean, I really think once you went with that, it would end up being kind of a city-wide thing that would be useful. But for that one, I mean, say you save 25% of your light times what?
Over how many years?
50 lights.
Those 50 poles over how many years payback, do you think?
I'd have to have your kind of energy cost. So I could do an audit for you and do that for you.
And I guess my next question is, would UDOT let us turn down on the main, on state main, would UDOT let us turn them down at night?
On those poles that are under 30 feet, they will, anything that's those 32 footers or 35 footers, 40 footers, traffic rated street lights, no, but 14, anything below that.
Like the big 40 footers out by the hospital, we can't turn those down.
Well, that's why I didn't know if UDOT had even let us turn these down. If we don't be talking, the only ones we can turn down would be behind the business.
Well, it depends.
And along State Street, because they're only 30 feet. Yeah.
So, I mean, we would, before we did any of that kind of stuff, I have light meters, so I go out and check my project, see how wide it is. So when I'm doing that kind of thing, I'll come out with Shane at night. Sorry, you're going to do a night trip. But we'll read the light as they're on a certain level, and we can dim them down and see what the levels are, too. So it's, we're not just going to, we never willy-nilly just turn them down and, I think that's all right. We'll actually see what we actually have on the ground. I'm a big believer of knowing what light is on the ground. So that would be something we'd do before kind of doing that. But even without dimming things, to have your outage management, to have, you know, your usage reports, all that kind of stuff, it has a big benefit to save on their labor time of deployments.
Well, the thing too is, like, I know with our SADE and all this stuff, that's this, the reports that we have to do for the power department, we have to describe where our losses are. And our losses, a lot of our losses have been in streetlights. A lot of losses. Because, you know, we have a lot of them out there. And so trying to figure that out is quite challenging. But with something, if we do go with something like that, at least be ready for the future when we do come up. And
things that took with the lights you've got up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Where the new ones we're putting up, we could do that, yeah.
Yep.
We wanted to make sure that all the LED lights we're doing are going to be future ready.
Yeah, they can plug and play.
So
the nice thing about these two is we've really done our research to make sure we're using the right company, because there's a lot of other companies out there that can't retrofit to the old ones, like your old non-LED fixtures. There's a lot of these brands that can't. These could even go on the old HID fixtures and pull up those. They can't dim them, but they can give you the outage management. So really, any light fixture that's out there in Mount Pleasant, this thing can be retrofitted and put on, as long as it has a receptacle on it, which pretty much all of them do. So, yeah, it's just good for future stuff. Like I said, I've been talking about smart controls for about 2 years with cities across the state. Everyone's been kind of like, yeah. Well, the last 6 months, we've been getting tons of phone calls. Hey, come back out, let's talk about it, we're going to do something. So the last 6 months, I've had six cities start switching over.
And I did go with two quotes. We went with, just so you know, this what I just didn't pull the trigger with these guys. But the other company we went with, I wasn't unsure with the product they had. But, you know, we did our research and was happy with the way these guys, I mean, they've been around since 1914. I think they know, kind of have a pretty good idea what's going on. And so that's why we stuck with these guys. So. I am going to continue to run numbers with Dave. He says we're good with the project and stuff, but I'm going to continue to watch that close and make sure that that's covered. And we won't get reimbursed from the state until the project's completely done.
Was that $50,000?
40,000. Yeah.
So it's a total of $288,000 then.
Yep.
We get reimbursed.
Yeah,
40,000.
It's pretty good that Shane pushed through to get that. A lot of cities, we mentioned a lot of cities that we work with have for, I think, 30 years in the industry doing lighting, and we mentioned that to the cities, and I'll tell you that very few of them actually go through the hassle that it takes to deal with UDOT and the state to get that funding. So he told me he done that. That's pretty good, pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I think the fact we're running, what did you say, 160 watt?
Anywhere from 100 to 240. There are different size of bulbs out there that we have.
That we're running right now.
That we're running right now.
We're going to run this down to 60 watts.
Down to, yeah, probably, yeah, right around 60, yeah.
How much money are we going to save there?
So,
cost at least.
In my previous, I should have brought the other presentation that we did before, because it had the money figures in there. But I can't remember what they are. But I can provide that information to you guys. So
I pretty well trust your judgment, Shane, just about everything you've done.
He's done a very good job.
Yes, he has.
He comes well prepared. But when he's done those demonstrations, it's been good. And we've actually been talking about that. Well, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A year since you gave that presentation.
Yeah, we've looked at many different types of fixtures, and I've been pretty happy with this one. that they ensures the other utilities around. So I discussed a lot with the different people at the UAMPS and all that, and so
I know just what little bit we've done around our place. This LED stuff is just unreal.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that being a lot less maintenance than regular bulbs and stuff.
It's less maintenance.
There's no bulbs.
So here's a nice thing. There's a no glow. Right. Say this burns out. Okay. There's a latch right here, swings open. You get a little impact driver, take out these 8 screws. This actually pulls off, and there's just 2 little wires and they're on a quick connect. Take those off, put a new one on, screw it in, and you're done. It literally will take me 3 minutes to pull it off, put a new one on, and put it on. Now, the only other part that can go bad with LED fixtures is the driver. And a nice thing about these, there's a lot of space in here. There's just a little latch, opens up, the driver's right there on 2 screws that pulls out, and it's on a quick harness, disconnects, throw it on, screw it in, and you're done. So maintenance is easy too.
Well, another thing we really liked about the lights is you notice these green ones out here, kids walk up to them, they shake the crap out of them. And so the light inside,
right,
it breaks, yeah. And these are pretty much, yeah, they're stationary. So it'd be nice.
So how expensive is this, like the lens when you was talking about somebody shooting it out?
I mean, you're covered for 10 years. I guess if somebody shoots it out, that's kind of different. But I haven't had to price that by itself, but I mean, I'm thinking
we looked at that actually early on. That came up, and our estimates were around $50 for that, which is less than some of your light bulbs that you have, your HID light bulbs out there right now.
Yeah.
Like Shane was saying, the durability of that versus an HID, your old stuff, you don't get the vibration that's going
right
to put the lamps out like they do now. And the heat's not generated from the LED module lamp where the light's coming from. It's generated by
down on the driver,
from the driver. And so everything's just a lot more durable. That's where you get a lot less maintenance on LED. That's why they're, you know, 15, 20 year life fixtures. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you thinking this project would go?
We're talking to UDOT and stuff. They're thinking around if we get the trigger pulled here soon, April, May area. So they'd like to have it, see it done before the end of the, you know, July.
Yeah.
And so.
We want to be out this year.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So.
Doable.
Let's get
it. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions before we wrap up?
I think it's pretty thorough. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. I appreciate your time.
No,
I've done it a couple times. But no, I enjoy it. I like when people are actually taking their time to know what's going on with lighting. Some people will just kind of throw stuff up and don't really care. And I think this affects our lives more than we realize, in our houses, roadways, everything. I mean, you think about when you don't have power in your house, how hard is that? Or on the roadways, what happens when there's no light? It's a bigger deal than all of us that we realize. So I like when people are taking their time to make sure they're doing it right. And I like being a part of that as well.
This light pollution, it's a big thing too.
It's a thing.
I went down to Ephraim down to the planetarium and he showed us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He showed us what happens with these lights.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what's nice. Ephraim, we were just there this morning, and they actually ordered a few of these. So all their residential lights are going to go in. They're going to be these now. All their other lights.
So yeah, that's another thing. I'm having Carson work on like a subdivision lighting. So if somebody comes in and wants to develop a subdivision, here's the specs for this, the lighting that we want. So there's no questions asked. So he's
been being proactive on that. But Shane's being proactive on those developments or housing developments. If you get your standard put together and you have that already written into your city ordinances, whatever you would call them, to hand that to the contractor, they have to use that fixture.
Right.
Manti, we just was talking down there to them, and they didn't have that into effect yet. And they wish they would have, because they didn't get the fixtures really what they wanted on that. But there's so many cities that go through that same that same thing. So getting that standard written, using the same exact fixtures is going to be a big deal.
Yeah. Especially after, you know, this starts to get developed for the next 10 years or whatever. They know what's out there. You don't have 10 or 15 different manufacturers out there.
Right.
She doesn't know what he's doing with maintenance. Kind of standardized on it and knows, okay, I've got five of the drivers for just in case this and that going out. So, yeah, we're going to put something together. It'll be a lot like that drawing right there, but a little bit less information, so we're not going to have banner arms and all that fancy stuff. But we'll put that together as well. Yeah, the light pollution is real. Sometimes we'll talk about it. They don't realize how much it actually affects things. So I think it's a good thing to try and limit as much as we can.
But we'll still have that safety.
Still have the safety.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it. My contact is on those drawings. So if you have any questions or need anything from me, reach out anytime. Let me know. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
Well, we're going to go to the Navajo project presentation, Shane.
Oh.
Changing this up a little bit still, so.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and just show you guys a video first.
Thanks, Carson.
Yeah, have a good night.
You guys see that at all?
It's dark tonight.
Right behind you, the lights are okay. Yeah.
So she can tell.
Is this that new plant, Shane?
No, this is a.
Thank you. Light Up Navajo is a pilot project. The only goal of the project is to extend electricity to families who have never ever had electric services. Partnered with the American Public Power Association, and 26 communities answered our plea. They traveled from the East Coast, from the West Coast, from Texas, all the way up to Indiana. So there was 12 states participating this year. Families told us how thankful and grateful they are to be able to buy a gallon of milk for the first time and put it in the refrigerator without having to worry about whether or not it's going to spoil in a few days, or being able to store meat and not have to cook it the same day. We had all sorts of emotions throughout the 6 weeks, of pure excitement to heartfelt tears. We're truly grateful for the communities that did send their crews here to the Southwest, to unknown territories. These families will, remember for years to come. Elder say, Ahyehat Shastin Shakao Jay, which means thank you. And it's thank you with the deepest gratitude. It makes you realize and understand the importance of your jobs.
I think that says it all right there. What we're looking at doing is they did the first pilot program last year, for these people, 15,000 homes. It's amazing that you still think of people here in the United States that still don't have power down in the Four Corners area. I would like to send at least two guys, Cameron and Toby, down. They're looking at going down the week of May 10th. And then two guys from Ephraim are also going to be going down to make up a full crew. So it'd be the week, we'd be the last week, May 10th to the 16th. So that'd be the week that they're down there. One thing we do have to do, they would have the materials down there to build the lines and all that stuff. Being a members of the American Public Power Association, which we are, and providing a mutual aid agreement through the APPA gives us the capability to do this. And so, with the permission of the council. Like I said, they do it for 6 weeks. We're only going to volunteer two guys, and two from Ephraim, like I said. And we would have to take maybe two trucks, or one service truck, and I don't know if I got to talk to Ephraim and kind of figure all that out. They would be doing hot energized work, which we have to provide our certifications for that, which we shouldn't have a problem with that. we'd still be covered under the insurance through the city and everything. APPA has some information, but I haven't really looked into that very much on the insurance wise when it comes to that. They'd go down, they'd work a full 10-hour day, build a line, come back, get fed, and then start the next day for a full week. They will be doing pole inserts, changing taps off poles, connections at the existing line. The equipment that they will be utilizing, also is your trucks, your climbing gear, all that. They have to be certified to climb. And we have to provide what PPE tools we do have that we could use and what's on our trucks. And all this information has to be sent. I was hoping to do this last council meeting, but all this information has to be entered in by January 31st. So we're kind of close. Do you have anything you want to add, Cameron?
Also, while we're there, they provide pretty much everything. You just have to get there.
Yes.
Get there. They provide the fuel and everything while you're there. They give you a fuel card to fuel up each day to get out to the job site and everything. Provide our housing, provide meals every day. Basically, we just provide the manpower and the truck. We don't have the same, their voltage is a different voltage than our system,
right.
So we don't have the materials that they do, but they provide the materials. A lot of utilities do donate materials to it because they figured when they first presented this, they said it would take them, the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, they figured it would take them about 50 to 60 years to do what they're getting done now in just a short amount of time. So this year they were saying, I think, 300 to 400 homes in 6 weeks, where it takes them an entire year to try to get that many. So what we do in 6 weeks, and they've got them coming from, I know this year, everywhere. I mean, it's like,
oh yeah, there's
all over the country.
How many homes are there?
There's 60,000.
60,000 people, 15,000 homes.
15,000 homes.
15,000
homes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, until they present, I had no idea. I knew that there was a lot of areas out there that didn't have power, but when you hear the scope of and the size of the area, you know. And so our main thing is when we go down there, we build just almost all of it's just single phase lines running clear out, but little groups of homes and stuff.
Yeah, so it's last year there's quite a few from Utah, from the UAMPS that went, and this year there's a few more that's going down. Us and Ephraim are looking into it, and who's the other ones from Utah?
I think Heber, St. George.
Heber and St. George. Manti is going. Oh yeah, you guys are going with Nampa, Grandpa, huh? So, yeah, June.
Well, we just got 1 week.
1 week.
5-10 hour day, or what?
12-hour days.
12-hour days.
Seven,
sorry,
seven
12-hour days.
Work.
Yeah. Yep. So I think it's a great opportunity, not only for the guys, but the experience. You know, it makes you really think of how fortunate we really are, especially in the United States. You know, and they would. I was talking to, I think her name's Shannon. She would try to keep us in the Utah side, so we don't have to go out of state. Hopefully, that would be able to work out. Because if we do go out of state, I got to get permission from you to go out of state, and insurance and stuff might work different if we go out of state. So hopefully, they can keep us on the Utah side.
So
things.
Would we be talking a lot of overtime with you going
No. I mean, would you be traveling and then working those days, or how does that work?
No, just regular week. Yep. Just a regular 40-hour week.
So are you down there first thing Monday morning, or you just leave here first thing Monday?
No, we would have to
go Sunday.
Probably Friday night to get there in time.
Oh, yeah, Friday.
Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And they have an orientation Sunday and take you out to wherever you're going to. Some of those areas, it's hours to drive out to where we're actually going to do the job. And then you work Monday through set for Friday, and then we'll be driving home Saturday and Sunday. Those bucket trucks and everything, they don't exactly go as fast as the little cars do. So
you guys are willing to donate your time on that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, going down, and then be coming back Saturday. So you're donating quite a bit, too.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like an awesome project.
And I have these guys, they're going to have to do a presentation when they get back.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're not going. Well, Toby will do it.
So I don't know if this is something you guys have to approve as a council, or how that works.
We're approved as a council tonight. We're not all here.
Right.
But I'm kind of like Russ. You usually don't present things if they're not worthwhile.
I don't know. Can the mayor, is this something the mayor can, without?
I'd say yes, it definitely is not costing the state, it doesn't need to.
Yeah.
So it's something the mayor can do.
But if you have to leave the state, we just get that approved.
Right.
Yeah. So
I think it's something that needs to be done. And I didn't go for a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely, you think about them people down there and what, how they live, and if we can help.
Well, you know, a lot of, when you think about the entire country, and it's probably just the western states that it would be practical for them to travel to, but that's a lot, there's a lot of municipalities that we can do.
Yeah. Like I said, in the American Public Power Association, there's over 2,000 municipalities, and a lot. There is actually quite a few from the east. I can't believe that travel out there that are flying, but then they'll have the trucks there to work with. You know,
those utilities are flying their guys there and then leasing on their own dime.
Yes,
leasing all the equipment.
Yeah.
And then some of them are also traveling from the East Coast, and some of them were saying it took them 3 days to get there with their trucks of drive time before they even did any work, and then 3 days of drive to go home.
No, that doesn't make much sense.
You'd wear your truck out driving there for
But it's to me, I think it's a pretty good opportunity, and to represent Mount Pleasant, you know.
Absolutely.
That's all I got.
That's a good newspaper article. There's some positive, right?
Mike, when Sam texts me, he's still down there, but he can be over the phone if you want. You can call him and have him.
Okay. That might be a good thing, and then we could approve the agenda and make these. I don't think there's. Well, we have to approve the budget or the invoice.
That's why I was hoping he'd be back.
Well, we've done it on the phone before. It's cool. We just use this phone.
So, can we go ahead and approve the Navajo project then?
Can you explain it to Sam?
Yes. Okay.
You can do that on your own.
We
Do you want the council?
I'd like to have the council approval, and I think Sam would be fine with it. We can explain it real quick and get his approval.
You bet. Do we want to go over these invoices?
It would be an amendment later on, but
so it wasn't filed.
Hello.
Hey, Sam.
Hey.
We got you on speakerphone because we've got a couple of things that need to be approved and we need the.
Okay.
You with us? Is that all right?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Thanks, Sam.
Yes, I apologize. We didn't do it short. We kind of get all down here. We kind of didn't really have much choice to change anything, so.
Right, we understand. Family issues do come up. So maybe we'll go ahead and go back here to the agenda, and we'll do a roll call.
So Justin is absent. He's excused. Kevin?
Here.
Mike?
Here.
Paul?
Here.
Sam is with us on the phone. And Randy had a work conflict, so he's not here.
Okay. So we need to approval of the agenda items.
I'll make a motion we approve the agenda items, moving item 6 in place of item 2 and item 5. Let's see that. Item 6 is the historical project lighting, and item 5 is the Navajo project presentation in place of 3. And then we'll take those others down in that place.
In the same order.
Yeah, and the agenda will remain the same.
Okay.
That's my motion.
Did you hear that, Sam, what the two that we changed?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Second. So I have a motion by Kevin to approve the agenda items with the moving of items 6 and 5 ahead of 3. Motion was made by Kevin, seconded by Russell. All those in favor?
Aye.
Roll call on that? No.
Nothing
stands. Okay. Approval of claims and requisitions. You'll find the paper there. So we have the invoice register from 111-2020 to 127-2020 in the dollar amount of $221,943.42.
Have any, so I'll make a motion. If you're ready for a motion, Mayor?
Ready for a motion.
Make a motion that we approve the invoice register from 111-2020 to 127-2020 in the amount of $221,943.42.
I'll second.
Okay, so I have the motion by Russell and seconded by Kevin to approve the invoice register from 111 to 111-2020 to 127-2020 in the dollar amount of $221,947,042. Roll call.
Kevin?
Yeah. Excuse me, yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Sam?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, it stands.
you been over the budget worksheet, Jeff? I need to get it home with me. I need to come and get this and take it home so I can
go over it with you.
Maybe one thing, Sam, just bring you up to date. Shane presented a Navajo project that he'd like to send two guys to the Navajo reservation for a week to help install power lines down on the Navajo reservation. And we would like to go ahead and give him the go-ahead with this, but we need a vote.
Okay.
So,
where was it at? It was on it's just out of state, right?
It's not out of state. It'll be in the southern Utah, down on the Navajo Reservation.
Oh, okay.
Kind of down in the Four Corner area. There is approximately 15,000 families down there today that still doesn't have power. So it's a group of cities, power departments, and everything goes down. They provide the materials. We have to provide the guys in a truck. They go down for a week, so we'd be paying them for a week. The guys would be volunteering some time, too, as far as travel and different things to get down there, and then they'd work their week down there to help install power out to houses that don't have power.
So the only question I would have is there more than just us that would be going in our area, or is there somebody back that has coverage for if we have an issue? I know I submit the presentation, so.
Yeah, we've only sent two of our guys, so it would be Cameron and Toby. Ephraim City is sending two guys also the same week. This is a six-week project. Different cities come at different times during that 6 weeks. So the week that we're looking at sending them would be May 10th through the 16th. So we would still have guys here to cover our outages. We'd be short the one truck. That's all that would be down as far as that and the two guys.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be the only question I have on it. So
do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the Navajo project has been presented by Shane for our people to travel to Four Corners area and spend that week helping them get the electricity off down there.
Go ahead, Shane. Or Sam. You hear Sam?
Yeah, I'm here.
You want to second that?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. I have the motion by Kevin and seconded by Sam to allow two city employees to go to the Navajo project preservation on May 10th through the May 16th. Roll call.
Kevin?
Yes.
Russell?
Yes.
And Sam?
Yes.
Okay. Another thing that you kind of missed was an update on the historical lighting project to go on here on Main Street and State Street. And we got some information for you to give to you on that.
Okay.
We can present to you or show you. Financial report. I don't think he's... You haven't seen the financial report, have you, Sam?
Not yet, no.
Yeah.
And so if you guys have that available, I could swing by tomorrow and grab that stuff.
We will. We'll have it available for you.
Okay.
Anything else on that agenda?
There's just that approval of the UDOT cooperative agreement. Yeah. We could approve that tonight. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that we presented. UDOT's going to help us with the lighting on State Street and Main Street to the amount of $40,000. Shane could elaborate on that.
Yeah, what it is, it's just an agreement between the city, Mount Pleasant City, and UDOT on agreeing to bring everything up to their codes when we're working here on the Main Street, because it is a highway. And so and they're going to give us $40,000 to help on this lighting project.
That'll be good.
So it's replacing the decorative lighting that we have.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be it. That's good. I guess anything you say help, that's good.
So yeah, the project's looking rough or about $288,000, and UDOT will give us $40,000 back after it is completed.
After it's completed?
Oh. Yes. So, do we have a motion to accept the approval of the UDOT cooperative agreement?
So that just brings everything up to what their spec is of what they should be?
Yeah, to right now they're direct buried poles. Over the years, they've upgraded their specs to, they want breakaway poles, anything over 35 miles an hour.
Well, that makes sense because they probably would make it with that liability issue.
Exactly, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. The poles will be 14 foot tall, LED lights on top, which will save us a lot there because the highest the LEDs will run is 75 watts versus up to 240 watts what we're running right now.
Right.
So.
They won't tell us what we can pick as far as colors and design or anything. It's just as long as it meets their specs, correct?
Yeah, it has to meet their standard, yeah.
Does it matter on color, though? That's what Sam's.
Oh, color about. Doesn't matter, no. We're just going to go with black just to match the rest of our poles.
Yeah, just going with black, and it will be a steel pole instead of the composite poles that we have right now.
And then the reason why we kind of went with steel is because of the weight from the flower pots and the flags. And that, because a lot of these composite poles, if you pull the skirt up, you notice that they're decaying and they're breaking from the weight. They're not made for that weight.
So, only one more question I have, sorry, on that would be, so that funding set aside is something you guys have already kind of planned, kind of in that loop, is that?
Yeah, we've been talking about this for 2 years now.
Okay.
So yeah, it's been kind of. I think we had a good presentation a while ago on it to the council. Okay. We're just bringing it back because I wanted to make sure everything was the way we wanted it.
We had quite a demonstration of the light and everything here, so.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I missed that.
That's all right.
So, but yeah. Oh yeah. Any questions on it? I'm good with that. Make a motion on that.
Okay, so Sam's made the motion that we approve UDOT cooperative agreement. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. So approval of the UDOT cooperative agreement was a motion made by Sam, seconded by Russell. Roll call.
Kevin?
Yes.
Russell?
Yes.
And Sam?
Yeah.
What about our budget worksheet? We're going to wait on that?
Yeah.
What do you recommend on that, Dave, on the budget report?
I was just going to hit on a couple of quick things. Everything is performing really well, considering how many...
Can you hear him, Sam? Or does Dave have to come closer?
A little bit. I can hear him a little bit.
Do you want to come just a little bit closer so Sam can hear you?
I'll try to keep it brief because it's not a lot of people here, and Sam's on the phone and whatnot. So I've been very pleased with how every department in the city has been performing this year. We've had quite a few emergency purchases. Sam, you remember even like the turnout gear that we've had to purchase, and so far that said, we're still performing in the black, which has been quite amazing. We even discussed wanting to do a test section with that new road material, and I can definitely say we should pursue that. Other highlights, the pool has kind of trimmed their deficit down, it looks like, from last year. Last year we lost, I think it was 93,000. Right now we're at 43, so we're making a lot of headway into that.
Yeah.
Brittany left.
She left.
And then just kind of passing on, I feel like every department head is really conscientious on the money they're spending and making sure they're going out and getting quotes. saving where they can. Everything down, even office paper. Natalie's looking, and you're like, oh, let's try some Amazon. So employees are making sure when they spend their money,
spend it wisely.
And then just with that budget worksheet, you have to look over on the available at the time. If your schedules are tight, I'm more than happy to stick around and meet with you in the evening if you have questions.
I found that's been helpful to sit down with Dave and he goes through that stuff with you.
Helps explain to you where.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so complicated to really try to understand. You really almost need one-on-one time to try to.
There's things that we get reimbursed or compensated through grants or donations or whatever, and so, or payments. You have to add one and subtract the other. I just find it's easier for me to sit down. It's easy to sit with you for an hour and go through it.
Have to get down here and get that done.
No,
in order to understand it, you gotta.
No, and I enjoy doing that, so don't feel like you're putting me on there. Meet with you for an evening or something like that. Something I enjoy.
Okay.
Is this something we have to approve by a certain day?
No, nothing to, isn't okay. Just a.
Just an information so we know where we're standing at.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Great.
Yeah, that's good.
So if you've got time, we'll just let you on the phone, Sam, and you listen in or whatever. The next item on our agenda is discussion of an action of a drug race. Whoops, a drag race in the industrial park by Colton Christensen.
Okay, yeah, I stay on all with him. I'm just getting ready to leave Manti now, so I'm outside the car because my kids are inside the car and making noise. So I'll be able to listen in. So you won't be able to hear them making any noise.
Okay.
So. Want them to have this?
Yeah.
I'll pass this so you can kind of see what we're looking at.
So let me introduce myself. My name is John Kaup. I'm the promoter of the Rocky Mountain Cascades, and we've done three events here at the local airport. Colton Christensen is actually one of my person that's helped me, and John Lee is not able to be here because of work schedule. We would just like to get permission again from the city to allow us to do another drag race event. Just a little bit of history on it. And we've done three of them. All of them have been really successful. The first one we did, we had over 30 cars that came in locally and out of state. Over 500 people did show up to spectate. The second one, we ended up having around 40 cars. 500 people showed up, but the mistake that I made was we did it during deer hunt. So that's a big no-no up here. So I learned not to do that again. The last one we did was last year. We actually had over 60 cars that did come in locally and out of state as far as Idaho, California, Nevada. And we had a head count was close to 900 people that did come in to spectate. That it did bring people into the city. This year, we're trying to do another one, June 12 and 13 of this year. I've had people reach out as far as Oklahoma City that they would like to come in and, you know, be part of that drag race event that we are providing. When we did do this, I did talk to the local business people, and a lot of them did give me a lot of positive feedback. The pizza joints were really busy. The gas station was really busy. So I hope it, you know, kind of helps the community out. And we do hire into the community, the fire department, and other people to help out to maintain safety and all that.
So what dates again?
We would like to shoot for June 12 and 13. The reason we're shooting for those dates because race season has started nationwide. And I've called a lot of the local racers and out-of-state racers and said, what schedule are you guys having? And those are the dates that would work. Just to bring in the out-of-state cars. The out-of-state cars are the ones that I like to say they bring the show in.
The big money cars.
The big money cars. You have cars, people like to see big muscle car, big tire cars, 8,000 horsepower cars. And I go through, we do a safety scene, make sure the cars are safe. Kristen, they provide a lot of cement. I noticed that they did add power boxes along the right side of that runway. So we would, if on the map you'll see the yellow line, we would add cement, 3,000 pound cement blocks that will contain the vehicle if they do lose control so they don't damage any of the property. We do provide insurance for the day's events, that it does provide $100 property damage, and then if any pedestrians do get hurt, we do provide a $2 million policy on that, that we also take care of.
You're the one that's done the last?
Yeah, I've done the last three. I've done multiple events all over Utah. I'm actually your Michael distributor tool guy, so you see me come by every Tuesday in my big white truck. And I was talking to somebody, and they say, we have an airport here that's, you know, not being used. Could you use it? And that's how, you know, it was brought up. John Lee was the first one that brought it up to us. Like I said, he was not able to make it here, but he knows that we were meeting today, and he actually gave us a lot of support. And we've had a lot of support from the community. They've come up and helped set up, take down, clean up. I hired different companies to come and sweep the runway to make sure it's safe. I contact the local police. I go to the hospital and just let them know what we're doing, just in case there is an accident, they are aware of what's going on. I've been drag racing for the last 20 years, locally and out of state. So, you know, I bring in people that I trust and people with knowledge that they can help us make a safe environment, family environment. We don't allow any alcohol. And we tell people, if you do get caught with alcohol, you will be reported and kicked off the property. That's a big no-no. We just don't deal with something like that. On the last three events, I've contacted the police, the captain of the police office here. He says he's had no reports or issues when we have done it. People are pretty, they understand that we're coming into your town. We want to keep it organized. We, you know, and then just leave it how we came in.
Because they have an ambulance on site.
We hire an ambulance to sit up there, Mount Pleasant, and they sit up there, and thank goodness we've never had them be used. Yeah, but I will never run an event without the paramedics on site, just because, you know, we are drag racing. Everybody does drag racing. We do have a waiver they must sign that releases the city, myself, and everybody. The same waiver that if you were to go to RMR or Las Vegas Raceway, the same waiver we have our lawyer go through and make sure is to par. And we presented that the first time we did it here in the city.
With RMR closing, I mean, we do get a lot of racers that want to race.
See, the only thing that I got with it, there's a lot of change.
Yeah. Eventually, I would like to build a racetrack somewhere.
Yeah.
But
we've sold some of these lots.
And that's, yeah, we were going to talk to, I know my cousin Edwin, he bought one of them. And I know there's the building, the one I just built.
Building,
yeah,
right there,
building right here.
And that's, we're going to, because last year we've had them come in from the airport, well, where you would go down to the airport. Well, we're just going to block that off and have them come in from the north, where the road comes through now. And we would like, John Lee kind of talked about it last year. I don't know who he talked to, but we'd like to be able to cut, you know, 3 feet through the fence and have everybody park in the horse arena and walk through that way, so we can kind of contain everybody to that side and not have anybody on the east side.
Yeah, using the contour parking lot.
Yeah.
Get you out of the
street, because it was kind of a mess last year.
Have the repairs some coordination with the contour to make sure they don't have anything going on that weekend.
With coordination, too, we've got to make sure what our county is with this EDA, where we're going to be resurfacing that. Right?
Well, I think one thing they done it last year, it was last summer, June. We knew all of this
was
taking place. And I remember talking about it, that this was probably going to be our last one.
Now, that's what we decided, that was the last. We got trenches dug across.
Right.
And we would repair the...
I don't know. Well, I'm worried
about what
you're going to be running into.
I think when I drove down there...
working on the project, I mean, we'd have to find out with the...
Wouldn't you have to know about this?
Sooner the better, just because there are other races that the racers are...
Did Paul leave?
Yes.
Yeah.
So part of this area where you have drawn in...
Do you mind if I come up here?
Yeah. Come on up. So all these lots have been sold.
Okay.
So what I would like to do is we would have to get a hold of these landowners...
Except get permission.
To get permission. The city is going to keep this section of the
runway.
this section of ground, okay, basically over here.
And the last thing that I didn't put it in
because of the bill.
Well, whenever we do this, I always, you know, basically hire security guys, or, you know, to make sure we want to make sure the people that own the owners are happy. So this way, we're going to, if we can keep everybody coming this way, this red line is all secure line that we put a fencing on. So all the way to this, so there wouldn't be anybody on this section. There is, to have people tell us, look, you need to come over. We normally put a wristband on an individual to come in, so we were able to track who's there, who's not. And of course, we want permission from everybody involved. We try to get everybody involved as possible, just to make sure there's no unhappy.
There shouldn't be pretty
much. What trench is that, Colger?
Are they coming down here?
No. So I've actually cut the runway in a couple spots to get utilities across it. They're not patched yet. They're still dirt.
I know they're right up here.
There's one right here.
At least they're past the intersection.
There's a diagonal one also that cuts across. Also.
Yeah, but.
Right here. This is about where the starting line was last year, and we were just going to kind of move it past.
So there's still a couple of cuts there. Yeah. And my only other concern is the roads. This road down here is open now.
Yeah.
And last year, what we ended up doing at this end right here, we actually blocked it off. We put some signs up there, and we had somebody out there watching. So, you know, for safety issues. And then we had this end blocked off again for safety issue. Everybody was coming in this way, but since the new building was put in here, we would like to be able to come in through the arena, keep everybody enclosed, have the food trucks right here, the bathroom, those would be the bleacher. And then we always leave it open air because a lot of people like to bring their canopies and just sit there with their family member. Nobody would be allowed on this side of the property at all. The only people allowed on this property, all the race cars would be parked right here. Everybody would have wristband on them, so we were able to track. And if we were to find anybody coming in this way, we would have the security people say, look, you need to come around, you need to pay, and we would make sure the owners are being
fenced off right here, you know, so we can pull down here at all and just have the racers enter from the north or from.
Yeah, that's not my concern so much as it is the property owners up here. You got the ones that build the wall.
Far west.
See, they got a road across there now, and they got a yard on the west side of the runway. And I don't know, you know, whether they'll be running across there.
They got a yard on the west side of the
runway?
They bought two lots on the west side. Okay. They haven't started nothing.
Okay. Yeah. So could we have somebody to talk to them? I don't know if they work on Saturdays there or not.
Yeah, that's well concerned. And then, of course, the trenches that we got there, you know, they'd have to be repaired before you'd send somebody down there in a race car.
Well, of course, we would cement, you know, put cement over the patching, make sure the smooth area. Just like when we did the burnout box over here, we got permission from the city council to go ahead and cut a square off, and we brought in cement and we smoothed it out. And all that was volunteer work and volunteer labor and all that. So whatever, and I already contacted a company locally that they would bring their sweeper again and they would sweep the runway completely off and, you know, wash it. And
the other part is it's getting chip sealed.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure when that.
Oh, they're going to redo the ends too this year, right?
Yeah.
You've got plans for the ends of the road. See, this is dirt on this end.
This is all dirt.
Yeah.
This is all dirt right here, and it's connecting.
But it wouldn't affect that at all.
No. Well, no, but the fact that we're going to be working, I guess, in the areas, maybe.
But this is a Saturday and a Sunday.
Friday, Saturday. So the way we'd like to do it is Friday, we call it test and tune. That way all the out-of-sight vehicle coming in can come in, test their cars, make sure their cars are ready. Then Saturday at 10 a.m., then for our time, we would do elimination and just run it back-to-back until...
All the previous ones have only done Saturdays, but we have people getting upset. It's taking too long to everybody give them time to test. Yeah. So we're Friday test, Saturday, Friday, sorry.
So, So the biggest concern I see is that we'd have to get all the property owners that now to agree upon.
The property owners and developers, the amount of work, the schedule being done, we just don't know what their schedules are or anything.
And it's going to depend weather too. If you've got a bad spring and you can't get out there and fix the road, it's hard to say.
Might delay the winter freezing.
You're just pushing our parameters a little bit.
Yeah, and a lot of the racers know, and we've had to know that, if the weather's bad, then it just gets canceled. There's not much we can do about it. But, we would take care and make sure the road is ready for what we've done. Every time we've done it here, we've hired a sweeper to come in and take care of clean the road. I myself race on it myself, and my wife and kids come, and I don't want to see any accidents, so I know what this road is. So we would make sure it's up to par. A lot of the guys that come, they're used to that. It's called the no prep racing. They go to around the nation to roads or runways, and they don't prep the road. It's basically no prep racing, and they just run their car. A lot of them are professional group of people. They're not amateurs. Yeah, quickly we
talk to the. Talk to the property owners, talk to Steve, JCI, see what his plans are.
You got Mike Bowles at Far West.
Yeah, I know Mike. I'll tell him.
If you guys get to go ahead, what I'd suggest is we hold all those property owners. So basically what we have to do is get to go ahead to meet with all the property owners, and you have to present the same thing. You have to get them to sign off.
We're going to get a hold of Jack and see what might be going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of ifs.
I know that they got a bunch of horses and animals out there. They're not real happy about all that.
The first time we did it, we did talk to the arena. John Lee did talk to the arena, and he was concerned about the horses. The arena did inform John that the horses warns poop by them. The
horses aren't that
More than that, is to see if they have any events on their
They haven't.
And with your grant, you might want to make sure too that you're not going to jeopardize anything with the EDA grant doing the roads. They may have some. You want to make sure their parameters are not going to say no to.
There's just a few things that I think before we can say yes.
Yes.
You've got to cover.
I mean, we want all the business we get. We went over this before.
We did.
We went over it pretty thoroughly. We told John that this is it.
Yeah.
This is the last go around because we got so much going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mom had some concerns. If I remember, maybe I can't.
Well, I just know we talked about it.
Yeah.
And then I hate to go back on what we said. If these people are planning on not being there anymore, then we throw it in there. We just don't want to do that without making sure it's okay with it.
Yeah, sure. I didn't know these were sold south of the intersection.
There's
one lot left, and everything else is sold out there.
Well, we got fiber optics stuck up.
Yeah.
Electrical stuck up.
That's why we would, that's why we put those cement blocks to protect.
To protect that.
Yeah.
Utilities.
Yeah. I'm sure it takes a lot of coordination with different people, and if we can get that, I think it's. Yeah. I've been told by a lot of community people that they enjoy it, they like it, a lot of the business people. The pizza across the street said they couldn't make enough pizzas fast enough to sell.
Well, I'd like to see if we could get a meeting scheduled with the landowners, because I think that's the place we'd have to go first.
Yeah.
It's too bad there's not more property where the railroad is down there. And, we could plan for something. To make one.
If the next city in Utah that can make one with RMR shut down, it'll be it. Because
Mount Pleasant can actually say, last year they were the only legal drag race event in the state of Utah. And we have promoted that in our Facebook page. If you look at our notes, we have over 14,000 people nationwide that follow the page to see what's going on. And I'm able to track the Facebook. We have over 1,400 people are always asking when's the next event, when it's happening. So it has grown from 30 cars to over 60 cars, from 500 people. Last year we stopped counting, and 900 people came in through the gates to look at. The food vendors, two of them ran out of food by noon because they were expecting that much.
Well, you had a crowd out there. I went out and watched.
Yes.
Yeah, I went out and watched.
And like I said, that's
fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I used to love to go up to the old Salt.
Exactly. They closed it down, you know. I went to Vegas just 3 weeks ago because that's the closest track it is for us, either Vegas, Corrado, or Idaho. Those are the closest track. So, I mean, I did promote it last year as Utah, you know, Mount Pleasant was the official drag race for the state of Utah last year. And, you know, and I've had a couple companies that make videos, 1320 and Big Daddy Video, they're out of Oklahoma, and they would like to come over and film just because they've heard it's grown so much that it's going that far out. So it started small and now it's become what it's become.
Well, let us cover some bases.
Yes, of course.
Keep in touch with the office and they'll be able to where we're at.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Any more questions?
Is there any way of keeping this?
Yeah.
Or get a copy of it?
Yeah, I'll make you a copy. Because this is I can go ahead and keep this. I can make a new one.
So what I'm saying is we would have to get a hold of...
Yes.
What we'd probably have to do is get a hold of all the landowners.
Yes.
With it being sold like it has been. Right. And we would have to have a meeting with them to see.
Yeah, I'm welcome to come back. I mean, I live in Pro. I'm welcome to come back up here. And I'm not the best... I'm not good at this, but I'm learning as I go. And you can see what we can do to make land happers.
We're not trying to discourage you.
Yeah.
We want you to know that. We're just.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see it go. We've got to cover
all these exactly.
Landowners to approve it.
I had a project planned and I was in the middle of it. The city threw a curve at me like that. I'd be a little poor.
Yeah. Well, that's why we can't do it because we can't even use this land now without
their
permission because it's all been sold.
Yeah. And like I say, I mean, if we have to push it to a one-day event, we could. It just makes it a little bit tougher.
So are you stopping construction by doing it for 1 day or 2 days?
It depends on the whoever's developing it would be on theirs, and that's why we would have to.
Well, I just don't feel like it would stop construction for.
Well, construction's not the problem. That's just not the problem with the landowners.
We just need to get
the landowners. If they don't want it, it doesn't matter what.
Right.
You know, we've been enough on this
city. I'm telling you what they're going to do with your property, you know, after they have plans to build it.
Yeah,
the construction part of it, I'm sure, is not a problem. It's just,
but if you guys have any other land that you guys want to donate, we can build a track on this for you guys. And it's
a question for which I had it, because our marsh on there, there's nowhere close. And the races don't mind the travels. I mean, most of the races are in Utah County North, and Mount Pleasant isn't a big deal.
We can keep this, and I'll just get a hold of it.
Most of them.
I'm going to have to get.
Yeah, I can bring you this. Like, I'm up here every Tuesday with my wrestle. I can drive by so I can stop by. John knows how to get a hold of me.
Let's check with Contour to see their schedule. And then, like I said, we'd have to contact the owners because I know some of these owners here are getting close to breaking ground.
Okay.
That's in this area. So,
yeah, whatever their plans are,
We can work around the schedule. It's just, I just have to have a week though, that way it's going to let the races, because they're already setting up their schedule for race season. And for some reason, when Oklahoma guys called me, I'm going to, where did you guys hear about it? Well, we had one of our guys call there and watch. You know, we wanted to bring some cars down. I'm like, well, okay.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you
for your time.
Next thing, number 10, discussion of water connections outside the city limits.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of people start to ask about them, and my concern is it's east of town where we're not got enough pressure to make it really. Coulter, maybe you can tell a little more on that.
Sam would be the better one to ask if he's still on the phone.
You still on, Sam?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You got quiet.
Yeah, sorry. I just got it on mute so I can hear still.
Can you explain better reason why we can't put any more connections up by,
Yeah, power plant.
It is. I'm trying to think of the highest connection, the guy's name.
You want?
No, tell him higher.
Who's our very top connection on the east side of town, Sam?
Tom Ming.
So Tom actually has a pump.
So the very highest connection that has on our pressure sustain valve is Marset from Perry Marset Larson. You can't crank up your pressure sustain valve any higher than any more pressure than what they're asking us people.
So anybody, this guy that's wanting water is actually up there by Tom Ming. We can't provide the pressure to him. So I don't know how we put any more connections up there.
I think Russ has got a solution to that. Isn't that a thing you do, Marco?
Well, I've got a tap more water supply system that pressurizes your home, but it wouldn't do anything to get the pressure. The line up there. I can pressurize your home after it gets in there.
Right, but check in there first.
Yeah, it's going to get to you. Where's this at? You know, above Mark Jorgensen's?
Yes. Oh, way up there.
Way up.
Just what side of the road?
Just below the flood dam.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, well, yeah. We don't have a lift pump. We don't have a lift dam.
No, it's all gravity there.
It's all gravity.
What have they been doing when I tap into our main line coming from the springs?
So far, we've only got, above Jerry and Martha, we've only got the one connection, right, Sam?
Aren't they running on the spring pressure?
Yeah. So, at the 92 well house is where our pressure valve is. From there, it backs it up to Jerry and Martha Larson, where our pressure runs out. And we can't build any more pressure from the valve. So Tom Means has to have a pump to pressure into his pump.
Well, it sounds like we have the capability to provide water for him. At this point, sounds like a well cover. You know, all of those kind of projects are in the works. The culinary water projects are in the works, and the irrigation project is all right there in that same area. And that's why it's so important that these projects don't get deep pushed back. Because there's issues that are coming up. And
they keep building east, we're going to be faced with a lot more of this.
Well, you got the whole south side of the road along there.
If we annex it. Are they city? They're county, right?
County. Even there, all of them's county up there, and that's the other thing. They're not even in the city.
And they're in the buffer zone.
They're in the buffer zone, but that's even more reason why we've got the policies in place so that as they develop, they've got the guidelines, just like we talked about with the lighting. And see, we have, of course, dragging our feet on that scenario. And we really haven't put anything in concrete yet. As far as this pending ordinance rule that we've got in place should prevent us, or should prevent them. In fact, this is the very reason why we want to be reviewing those things, because some of them we simply can't provide the utility.
Right.
That's exactly why that pending ordinance rule is in place, because there are several that we just don't want to be held accountable when they start building. That's why it's so important to review these plans and make sure that we have the necessary utilities for them when they do get their home done. See, he may already be started. I don't know, but hopefully this is a case where I don't think we can provide anything
right now. Right.
So have they approached the city about?
I haven't seen anything at any time. Usually when they're building in the buffer zone, the county sends a permit to us. And with that, we have the ability basically to say what we will provide if we want to provide. There's nothing that says because someone's in their buffer zone, we want water, we have to provide it. We do not have to do that.
Right, but we don't want people building in that buffer zone that's going to be in the way of a future power line or a future water line or a collector road and all this and that.
And the county does have, we did do a preliminary kind of road plan. The county building inspector's office does have that plan that Sunrise put together when we implemented the buffer zone.
Right, but we haven't designated it yet and we're not inspecting the site, so it's hard for us to really put a stop to anything. And I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've been reviewing these kind of projects. Like sending a guy out on site saying,
I don't think we could get any jurisdiction, I think.
Right.
Well, we do, with the buffers.
But if it wasn't a road, if it was going down where we said like Fifth West was going down, the county building inspector is supposed to be looking at a road plan and then would send that information to us to say, hey, do you want to allow this? Because this is going right down your future Main Street.
I question whether they, because we still have not established those collector roads. They show that plot plan, but as you look at that plot plan and look at what it's running over, you're not going to tear somebody's house down because it shows it on that piece of paper or barn or anything else.
But the county is supposed to be looking at that, though, when they have someone proposing a structure.
Well, it's just like this penny ordinance rule. It's buying us some time, and we're looking at extending that. So for right now, I don't think we can make any commitments. I honestly don't. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we can make any commitments.
Is Sam still on the phone? Because Sam had said once, too, that them connecting in up above our water supply is not okay as
either. No, it's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah. We've talked.
Contamination.
Right.
Well, so your lines in your system, through Division of Drinking Water and EPA are classified as set lines. So like you have your distribution lines, your transmission lines, your source lines, so forth. And they have rules and regulations of what you can and how you can do things with those lines. So like source lines, which is the spring line coming down to feed the tank, technically everything they've written it, you lead a connection into that. However, this is probably the ones that have been up to prior to a lot of this stuff being put in place due to the fact when they put the spring line in, the city back in the day had no choice but to offer a connection system on people that had the property to run that line through it to get it down to a tank. So there's some connections up there you ain't got a choice on. It's just a matter of trying to avoid any more in the future.
But again, I don't think it's something we have to act upon right now. That's kind of what we listed it on there as a discussion.
I had one person, the reason it's on there is because I did have
another person call in.
Dustin Sorensen, that's wanting to build up there and wanting to know if we will allow a water connection. And I don't know if that's the property you're talking about or not. If he says it's on 9, what I have written down is just off of 900 East. Is where his property is.
So his must, I'll bet you his is over on that piece just to the north of Coyote.
But that's what brought this up is he came and was talking to me about it and so he's we basically
east of 900 East. He's not clear up.
Right.
That's still in the county.
That's it, it's still county though.
It's still county, it's not right. The city limits. But what's that? Mm-mm. All I have is basically his name and address. But what brought this up is we kind of need to just make a determination on what our policy is going to be on outside city limit water connections. Because we are having more and more and more approach us wanting to connect into the city water.
We've had the policy that if somebody's going to do that, that it's going to be on their dime. They're going to have a contractor give them a quote to extend our main line. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what we've been having them do. Extend the main line and their connections, and they've got fees that we've established. So all of that's going to be on their dime.
Right.
So are you kind of... If there's one on 900 East, that's about where Parrish just got through building.
If it's on 900 East, they should be allowed a water connection.
Right. Well, it's east of 900 East.
Oh, just on the east side of the road, or?
Well, I think
I don't know how this address.
We don't know exactly. That's what I'm saying. We can provide pressure in that area.
So I've been approached by another guy that's called me on the phone that wants to build up there by Tom Meansam.
Right.
But then this other guy, I think. You know that piece that Gillens has owned just to the north of Coyote's house?
Right.
They're looking at developing that also.
They would have to, in my opinion, they'd have to run a main up there to do all that. That would be at the owner's expense.
Because right now...
There's nothing up there on the north side of County Madison.
No.
So if they want to develop it, it would be kind of like that down on the west side of town. They just have to put in a main.
And they're wanting to develop, you know where Joe Eisen's piece is down there by Bud Gallup?
Yeah, when he was talking to me.
Yeah, Joe, there's a guy that wants to buy that and put three homes in there.
Well, it would be the same thing. He's going to have to update that line that they're not only wanting to do it in, but the same thing. They'd have to bring it up to an actual main, because technically it's a... If you have a certain amount of homes, your minimum main line fee can only be 4 inches. Where PJ was only one home that was originally being put on that house, that's why it's allowed to be in over him. But anything that you consider as more than separate homes on to, it has to be a minimum 4-inch line.
So what's that number? Do you know off the top of your head?
That's through the division of drinking water. That's through your state. If you go into your... I can get you all the information on that. You can look up all the rules and regulations and all that stuff.
Okay.
If on any kind of line extension, anything like that, we have all that in there, on all the rules and regulations.
Because that would now put four houses on there with a cul-de-sac, and we need fire protection on that.
Well, for fire protection, you have to bump to a six page.
No sewer.
No.
I mean, that was a county line, that was a county road, and they allowed Brotherson to upsize the line to accommodate those. But that, there again, that's in the buffer zone, and we should be designating the width of your road and all of that. Manti, you could have Manti on the west side down there, and you know what they're doing? They're going through and they're moving everybody's property lines 30 feet, both sides of the road, to get enough width for the utility and all of that. They've traded people's property. The people have donated the property, and they're paying to move the utility, and they're wiping out fences, they're moving irrigation lines, well, and power poles.
There's a lot of different things right there. They're making one of their transmission lines right there too.
And we just put that new power line down that county road, and that would have been a collector road. And more than likely, we should have probably held that thing, 30 feet to the east of where that road is, just to avoid what Manti is doing right now. So that's why it's so darn important to get this buffer zone designated, so that when this kind of stuff comes up, those criteria.
Well, I didn't think he could put a subdivision down there because you need 5 acres.
The water line isn't big enough. And when they start developing, are we going to want all them on septic tank when it's all downhill to our sewer plant?
Well, at that point, it's not downhill.
You know what I'm talking.
Is this the road going over to Van Lewis?
No.
Yeah, it's the road to Van Lewis.
Yeah, that road, yeah.
Yeah, when I seen what Manti was doing, I'm thinking, we got to get off our hands. where can it be in a fence, you know? They've established their buffer zone, and it was a lot of work.
The other thing that concerns me is, like, up there at the gyms, there's already a well there on that old house.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, should we be, if we're going to provide a water service, should we be getting that well right back to the city?
Mm-hmm. Usually when there's not.
Or even down
there. I think there is some regulations when people have a well. There is some things where they increase their wells.
And you know, even down there, if we're talking that area, would we get some irrigation water shares to provide the culinary water?
You can't exchange culinary share, or irrigation shares for culinary.
No, but again, we can put in our irrigation system to give more people in town irrigation and less of our culinary.
Yeah, when they develop, that's the other thing. When they develop, property that currently has irrigation on it, that those shares have to go into the city.
Right.
But the irrigation company says any of the shares that are on the west side of Pitt West can't come to the town. Can't come in town.
Well, they unless they can.
That's if the irrigation.
They're going to develop those shares.
So it has to be.
If that ground's not being used anymore, that ground has got to turn over the water shares to develop, to come into the city. That's part of the, we're in the process of dealing with those
ordinances. Well, you couldn't just turn around and sell.
No.
So you got a field down there. You can't just sell the property and keep the water rights and sell the water rights to the city. That can't happen. You have to develop it.
They can't be selling the water rights. You know,
and then come to us to get water.
There's a lot of stuff that's got to be taken care of before that kind of development takes place.
So
it's sitting in on these irrigation meetings and talking about taking those shares and figuring out how to how many shares per piece of ground and all that sort of thing. I mean, if we're going to provide irrigation shares, they can't develop 20 acres out in the fields and not bring water shares in, and then them shares stay in the unused still farm ground.
Right.
That doesn't happen. I mean, it's got to come in.
But we got to also watch, because we don't want to be paying the foot in the bill too to do all these diversion changes.
Well,
and irrigation companies to put the water back into the city pond too.
Well, that's exactly why we're developing the two different ponds. So that,
but you take water shuttering cases, it's on a different pond. So you'd have to go up the canyon and shoot all those diversions.
That's right. That's right. That's why they're, first of all, they want to combine the two irrigation companies, Mount Pleasant. And the other thing is, if you divide the water before it goes into the ponds, and a section of the farmland comes into the city, now all they gotta do is adjust the weirs with the water coming in accordingly.
But you gotta have an adjustable weir.
And every ditch does.
No, most of the weirs are permanent.
Well, not like...
Because they don't want anybody going up and messing with
them. Well, but here's the thing. You've gotta be able to adjust them because we're gonna be developing this ground, and so those... That's why they're building the farmers' ponds and the city ponds, because we would not eliminate the problem we've got right now. We've got people in the city, they complain that the farmers are using too much water, and the farmers complain that the city is using too much water. So if each one has their own pond, then it's their responsibility to regulate it.
But yes, I know exactly what you're saying, but the pond that, like, I'm using Charlie Case, for example.
Okay.
If he's getting it off a different ditch than the city is, then every diversion from that pond up has got to be changed according to moving those shares to the city pond. Every diversion.
So you're talking about Charlie K, and what you're saying is he's using city water lines now?
No, he's not using irrigation.
Right.
He's in a different ditch than anything in the city is.
Right.
So he's on a whole different pond.
Right, he didn't get on the farm.
So you have to change the two different diversions.
Well,
that goes into those ponds according to the shares that he's transferred
into. That's why there again that.
The irrigation comes
from by having the separate crops. Now the adjustments can be made ahead of the farm. You can't regulate the flow on the farm.
No.
It's different, you know, and so.
But if you've got a diversion here that's taking half the water,
right.
Like Charlie's, so half of it's going in one pond, half of it's going in the other pond where Charlie's at, you got to change this diversion now, you got to change it. So this pond gets less because you're moving it up here.
Right.
And then you have to change this one to give you more.
Right.
And all those are still playing out well.
Well, that's part of what's being developed right now. They're engineering. You know, they're aware of those circumstances. They really are. And so they're going to. I'm not the engineer, but I'm smart enough to know that it's going to be easier to regulate the water in the individual ponds than try to meter it out of the ponds.
Right, so, but you're going to have to change every diversion.
Right. And I think it's also going to be called in the
water. And every time you transfer some water, you have to do the same thing. So, like we're talking down here, if they have two or three shares.
Right, that can't stay on.
You're going to go up the creek everywhere and change those diversions for half an inch or whatever their requirement is.
How big? Good luck. Anyway, that's
they think so complicated with all these rules and regulations.
Well,
that they're to protect you, but by golly, I'll tell you, it gets to the point where you go.
Well, you got a situation where all this country's been farmland. You look at Spanish Fork, for example.
When I lived there,
7,000 people. That was farmland all around that.
Yep.
To the north, to the west, up at the east. But he wanted to build up there because that was where the wind come down. Alfalfa and every field. That's all farms.
Yep.
Where do you think all the irrigation share went? They're drinking that water now.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, to say and those
irrigation they're running out of water up there. They have sections.
Well, they got all the water you need.
They have sections downstream up there where they're rationing water.
They got strawberry water. They got those springs coming out of Spanish Fork Canyon. They don't like water.
Well, for whatever reason, they're not getting it.
Well,
they're going to run south.
Because, see, I got a nephew that just built.
In Spanish Fork?
Well, up there on Elk Ridge, up there in Deer Meadows.
He's in Salem.
Yeah, he's in Deer Meadows. Well,
That's a different.
Yeah, Elk Ridge and up in there.
But even a lot of that area.
They are going to run a strawberry sapling. So
yeah.
They took it north, now they're going to come south. And
this is called Mary Water.
Right.
For whatever reason, they've had where they've had to ration their water. That's why these places are up there, they're buying by system. Because they can store it, and on those days that they don't have the water, they got water. And on the days they got water, they fill them tanks up. And then use it. It's really getting to be quite a... When I first done it, I thought,
we're going to be in that same situation if we're not careful.
Yeah, and now I've got a whole bunch of people. It's awful interesting what I'm doing.
Let's move on to the next agenda item. Reports from city council members.
I think we're... I don't have anything.
I don't either. We...
This is, for a short meeting, this is a long meeting.
I've got a Ward Family History Fair going on over there. I got to get over to, too. So.
I have one thing. Since it was brought up last week, or last meeting on governing board responsibilities, I come up with a list. I'd like to pass that out.
Good with me.
I have a list of what they were before.
Yeah, a lot of them's changed.
Yeah. Have you seen that list?
Yes.
Have you?
Yep.
Yeah, have you seen this list for us?
Is that the one we done before?
Yep.
Yeah, in the secondary. Yeah, they had me secondary irrigation, streets and walks and recreation programs.
We've kind of changed it up quite a bit, though.
Now, that don't bother me that I lost the recreation programs.
It bothers me that you give it to me.
Well, I got the all button, so.
That's right.
And then one other thing I had, February 18th, 7 p.m., we're doing a overview of the 10-year plan results.
A public hearing
on that.
Who do we give them surveys to?
They had a return envelope. If you don't have that, you can just give it to us and we can give it to the professor. Yeah. And then also, though, there's a public hearing at the same time to consider amending the minimum residential size to match county specs of a 24 by 36 foot primary residence that matches Sanpete County's.
Okay, I need those dates again.
February 18th
is what?
It's a Tuesday night. It'll be at 7 p.m.
City Council meeting?
No. City Council will be at the 11th, so it'll be in between. And then along with that, to send out the same public hearing notice, we're going to send out to amend this second City Council meeting to move the time. So we're going to do one advertisement for three different things, as three different public.
So we'll be having a public hearing on the 18th?
Yes. Well, we'll have to amend our City Council meetings.
So
we might have to start one at 6:30.
Well, the only awkward thing with this, yeah, it's like two of the Planning Commission, the other one's the City Council. But we, I mean, we can do that.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Well, can't we have the notifications at the second Tuesday and then the approval on the board, so we don't have to put a meeting in there? I guess that's what I'm wondering. All it is a matter of publishing a public notice, isn't it?
And if you're changing the ordinance, you'll have to have a public hearing.
Right, that's what I'm
saying. We can do that as part of the City Council.
It would be before City Council.
Right. Yeah.
The council meeting on February?
Yeah, you got two council meetings in February, one on the 11th mm-hmm. and one on the 25th, right?
Mm-hmm. So do the public hearing on the amending the ordinance on the 11th is what you're suggesting?
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks.
And you have to have public notice.
Yeah, we have to have
2 weeks where it's published.
That's what we could do.
Well, if you put it there on the 11th, and then you could do it on the 25th, too.
Yeah, that way we could do it all in one public
right.
advertisement, I guess is what we're trying right. to think of. We yeah, could do all
consolidate them.
So we'd have to have a public hearing on the ordinance of changing, amending the City Council meeting time, and then we'd have all the other planning and zoning. Information that night also.
Well, whatever you can work out.
Okay.
You know what it is. Mm-hmm. We got the time change, and there was another change that was, pending ordinance rule or something.
It's the minimum size of a structure.
As we talked last meeting, the pending ordinance rule expires in March, and so we probably need to be extending that.
I don't know if we can. We'll have to look into it.
I think Mark's supposed to be looking into that.
Yeah, he gave me a paper said we could, but I remember sitting in that attorney when he was here for planning and zoning. He said 6 months is all you could do. and then it has to come off.
As far as the planning commission, I mean, that this changing the specs, that addresses their immediate concern of why they put on the pending on rest rule.
So this would change the size of the buildings, so the modular homes would be able to come in, the single homes would not be.
We're going to need different regulations for Aspen Village
being designated as a trailer park like it is.
Right, that's what I'm wondering. Don't we need separate rules, building rules, ordinances, or whatever for Aspen Village? Like, is that still considered a mobile home park or what?
Residential multiple RMH.
So,
but what they would be changing is adding in language into every residential zone about your minimum housing specs are a 26 by 34 structure.
So theirs wouldn't be any different than any other areas?
Not as far as the minimum size.
Take care of those single ones.
Yes.
And then we might have to come back and address it, but for right now that buys the time that we're talking about.
That's the change the planning commission felt comfortable until we got feedback of our general plan survey that kind of more put those questions out to the public as far as zoning questions they wanted to see.
So if we adopt that minimum size, that would eliminate the simple ways. And that would have to be just for right now. Adopted in all zones. And then we can go back and modify it according to the act.
Right. Okay, so those are the two things that you've got to be able to have the public hearing for. And then I think you adopt it after you've had the public hearing.
The next city council.
The next city council.
Then we have to adopt.
We don't have time, do we, on that? We're on the 28th right now, so
we can't advertise it.
Well,
because it won't come on the paper until like the
Thursday.
All right. The 30th, it's the 2013. Which would be user.
Well, I would have had to go to the paper yesterday. I don't have time to get it in this
thing. Yeah. As soon as it will be published.
So it's a publisher on the 11th, right? No,
actually,
we can't publish it. We won't publish it until the 18th.
Wow. No, it would be published on the
25th.
It'd be on the 5th and the 12th, and then we've got the public hearing here. Because mm-hmm. we're right here today.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to come out in the pyramid the 5th and the 12th. That's our 2 weeks advertisement period to take on the 18th. And then we can adopt it on the city council.
That's why it's
important. And so then again, and that puts us ahead of the March 23rd date. And then we're advertising all three at the same time. You agree with that?
Yeah. Let's push forward.
Okay.
On the convoy, I don't know if this was written up. But this one strike rule, where they had, when we suspend them from going out there, I think we need to soften that up a little bit. It needs to be negotiable.
We're going to have to pull out that policy because we can't get the committee together. So we're going to have to pull out that policy to see, because we're trying to do that. And to get the five of us together, it's like impossible. So we need to really pull that policy out and see if we can. What would I have to do to amend that to?
Yeah.
Because it caused a lot of heartburn.
We did. Another option was our city attorney, Kevin Daniels, did offer to do a mediation where he would mediate with the two groups. Where he would meet with one group, then he'd meet with the other group, then he'd meet with the two together and try to do a mediation, which may be an option for all of them.
Yeah, because we just can't get that group together.
Mm-hmm. It's just too bad. And I told Jeannie today, I said, it's just too bad that we just can't, them two can't get together and say, hey, listen, I apologize.
That's why I wonder if the mediation with Kevin might be a good.
Shake the hand and move on.
Well, I don't think that we've got to be so stern. If somebody makes a mistake, they're banned for life.
Yeah, let's.
Well, it wasn't a ban for life, just.
It was a ban for years.
A year.
Yeah.
2 years.
Even for years.
Well, like I say, if you give a guy a speeding ticket, you don't mean he can't drive down the street.
No, but it will stay on your record for 2 years.
Well, there again, we need to have those problems.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I feel the same way. I
think we need to get our policy out and relook at it. Because that's where we're coming back to. So we've got to be covered to have our policy. Mm-hmm. Whatever we're going to do, we've got to follow.
See, I still think Jack could mediate and work and do what he has to do out there. And it might be easier for him. I wonder if he's not feeling a little bit of pressure. This is the way it's going to be. This is the way it's written up. And I got to do this.
Yeah.
It might make it easier for him to.
Well, and we all need to remember too, it's not just out at the arena that we have issues. It's every place that we have here at City, there are people that are not happy with what's being done. And everybody complains. So.
Yeah.
It's not just the
no,
arena.
No, it's no.
So.
Anything else?
Anyway.
Adjourn. We'll adjourn the meeting. For the short one.
Yeah.
Bye, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, guys.
Take care, buddy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.